Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
If there's one common thread, it might be that men perceive church as too feminine.
We have to be aggressive in the world when it's appropriate. We are warriors.
1, 2, 3. Warriors!
You are a real man when you commit to study God's Word and you commit to being conformed and transformed into the image of Jesus Christ. That's the biblical perspective on being a man.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Betwixt bothered and bewildered, this is Wretched Radio. Not sure that's exactly the way the song was written, but the point is, I'm scratching my head. I have to confess, I am ignorant, but I am willing to learn. And here's why. I have bumped into two gentlemen I respect. I believe they are good theologians, would never even question whether or not they're brothers in the Lord, and they have a radically different opinion about one particular issue. They just see it so differently than I do. So I'm asking myself the question, is it possible? Because I happen to think these guys are wrong, okay? I think they're wrong. I love them. I think they're wrong, but they're not dodos. So is it possible that maybe, just maybe, I need to be willing to reevaluate my perspective, even though I kind of think for the most part I'm pretty right? Do you ever run into one of those situations? When don't we give in? I think when it's orthodox issues. If somebody wanted to tell me, well, actually God is four persons. No. God is two. No. One. No. Three persons, one God. Just not a compromise. Jesus Christ is Lord. Grace alone, faith alone, Jesus alone, the five solas. Not going to debate that. You're wrong, period. And if you don't recant, you will perish because you do not believe in the right God. Argument. Secondary issues. I'll hold on to those quite tightly. I debate them, willing to change. I don't think I will, but I'm willing to if you can prove to me through Scripture that you're right. I'll give in on secondary issues and change my eschatology. I sort of think this is right, but hey, you want to persuade me? I'll try to defend. I might even try to persuade you, but I'll give in. Tertiary issues should be held very loosely. I'm willing to give in. I kind of think I'm right, but when somebody really, really smart has a completely different opinion and we agree, really agree on level one and level two, and there's just one thing in level three where it's like we just have a difference of opinion, I have to ask myself the question, is it possible that I have this wrong? What is the issue that I am talking about? Specifically today, Ferguson. The story that we are being just perpetually reminded of on the news. This is apparently now the biggest story in the country, and we are all following what is going on. We've seen this before. And my inclination is to go, yep, we've seen this before. We've seen it with Trayvon Martin. One death, a particular skin color does something to a particular skin color, and for some reason this one catches on. Now, I'm just guessing. I'll tell you what, Joey and Tony, let's see if you are representative at all of every white person who is listening right now. Uh-oh. There's a part of you who says to yourself, self? Why don't they ever talk about the black-on-black murders? Did that thought cross your mind as you pondered the Ferguson or the Trayvon Martin situation? Why don't we hear about the 60 murders in Chicago last weekend? Do you never ponder that question? Why this particular case? And you think, well, because it's white on black racial as opposed overtones. To black on black. They're racial overtones. And you, because of your skin color, have that thought. I think people of a different skin color maybe don't have that thought at all. Now, this is not an essential orthodox issue. It's not even, in my opinion, a secondary issue. The death of a young man in Ferguson is, I think we can put it on the tertiary level. Now, it has big implications, But this is one where it's confusing. There's a lot of details. There's history. There's societal issues involved. And we all bring our skin color to the party. That we can't debate. Now, I have not made any accusation about who is right and who is wrong. And I am not sitting in this chair saying, if you're white, you've got it wrong. And I'm not saying, if you're black, you've got this wrong either. I'm not saying anything. All I am saying at this moment is that we bring our skin color to it. You just can't deny that. And I can't forget that either. I bring presuppositions to every situation in my life, and so do you. And you have got a pickup truck full of them, and so do I. And so when I enter into any situation that demands biblical application, I've got to do my best to go, okay, I can't think about my white experience or my black experience or my opinion or who I've listened to. I've got to just go blank and try to think about this biblically. And the reason that I'm pausing today is because I will confess to you that I haven't watched much of this story because it feels like a rerun. This is how I have assessed it. Now, please, this is how I've assessed it. I'm just telling you about my experience. I am not making any sort of judgment on this situation. I feel like I'm having deja vu. I haven't watched much of the details. And the reason that I have not watched much of the details is that I believe, as a principle, I do not render a judgment until I get all of the details from both sides. Remember what the proverb says? And I'm paraphrasing, like most Bible translations these days. When you hear from one person's side, it's a done deal. Case is closed. And then you hear the other person's side and you go, what? Really? You're kidding. Well, that changes everything. And so when it comes to any sort of case, whether it's this, whether it is something theological, it is a church issue, I go, well, wait a second. First of all, is this any of my beeswax? Second of all, do I have anything that I could possibly contribute to this? Third of all, do I know enough to really weigh in and say anything and render a verdict? And I can't do that because I'm not a court. And I do not know what is going on. So, for instance, there are some people who are lamenting, it has taken 10 days and we still don't have any sort of information from the government. The family of this young man, of Michael Brown, always kind of makes me kind of go, Michael Brown? No, not that Michael Brown. This is Michael Brown from Ferguson. They had an autopsy done, and boom, got the information straight away. The government's, we're waiting. Now, you would be inclined, you could go, hey, then the government is trying, there must be up to something behind closed doors. Maybe they are, but here's a question for you. How long does it typically take the government to do an autopsy in a situation like this? What is their average ROI? Their, I guess that would be right. Their average return on the task. What? Maybe it's normally 3 weeks, and they're right on schedule. After all, we're talking about the government here. I don't know the answer to that. And so when I realize I don't know a fraction of all that is going on, I sit and wait. I'm patient. I can wait. Now, let's say I had a passion for this particular case. I would let it play out, follow along as much as I felt like it was good stewardship of my time. And if a verdict was rendered that caused me to go, that seems unjust, then I would determine what course of action, if any, I might take. Because remember, we can't be fully passionate about every single issue. Can't. If you're fully passionate about evangelism, you're fully passionate about one thing, you can't be involved in the life issue. And if you're fully involved in the life issue, you can't be involved in racial issues. And if you're fully involved in racial issues, then you can't be involved in the life issue and evangelism. I can't be engaged in everything, and neither can you. And there's a danger, and I've been reading some of this lately, that some people are almost insistent. This is the biggest issue that evangelicals face today. I'm sorry. Might be for you. That's your perspective. I don't see it that way. And I'm not postmodern, but I think it's entirely valid that different individuals see different issues as the most important issue because it's their perspective. You ask somebody who is a pro-life warrior, what they think about this case, you know what they're going to say to you? Yeah, and 4,000 babies, mostly black, were murdered today. Sorry, I'm passionate about that. And they would contend with you about what is the most important issue. And we want to be careful that we don't make our issue your issue and you don't make your issue my issue and vice versa. Plead your case, be passionate about it, and then let people decide where they're going to spend their time. Because I can't be fully whipped up on everything. Because if I were, I would be spending all of my time in Chicago right now over the murders that are going on there. Oop, and then run to Pittsburgh because I'm certain there are injustices going on in Pittsburgh. Cleveland, definitely Cleveland. And pretty much any place in California, which would just be my guess. I can't respond that way. And I've been reading some evangelicals that have been telling me I need to be more passionate about my response. And until I get all of the information, I can't do that. I don't think that it's prudent. I don't think it's biblical, and I don't think it's wisdom. I'll stay as informed as I feel like it. But not until everything is out that can be out, can we really say this is an injustice. Either way. Now I am weighing in, but this is an equal finger point at black and white. If you are, whatever way you want to go, whatever way you want to go. If you're black, you got to wait, my opinion. You're white, you got to wait too. But remember, in this country, right now, there is a precedent in this country, and I can't think of any biblical reason to contradict it. You're innocent until proven guilty. So, is the black man guilty? Not until he's proven guilty. Is the white cop guilty? Not until he's proven guilty. So I'm not gonna go on the streets and protest what I think is an injustice when I have no clue what is an injustice yet. Now, there are some theologians, and I'm thinking of one in particular, and I'm not gonna mention his name because he's a brother, and I don't care to tussle it. Maybe we'll tussle it if he accepts my invitation to come onto the program. He claims that we don't need to know all the details because what we need to know is that a young man is dead. I agree with that. But dozens of young men are dead over the last couple of weeks because of violent crime in the city. But okay, if you're demanding my attention on this one, I still cannot engage until I know everything. And this theologian who's a good guy, you probably know who I'm talking about if you're following this story on the evangelical websites. He said, you know, we know enough. And this goes on enough where it's white on black, a white police officer with a black citizen, that we know enough now where we can say this has to stop. There's too much of this. Now, I recognize that's debatable. I get all of the nuances. We're not tackling those yet. But I still hold the position I don't know enough yet. But a lot of evangelicals are weighing in. And as I read a lot of these guys, not all of them, as I read a lot of them, I believe it was Christian Post who compiled a number of them. They received, got some pretty high-profile evangelicals to respond. What do you think about what's going on in Ferguson? And a lot of them have responded, and I have to confess to you, I'm reading these, and I'm disagreeing with virtually all of them. Now, only arrogance in a situation on a tertiary level would say, well, they're all wrong. Or they're completely wrong. How's about that for more specific and precise language? We have a tendency, okay, I have a tendency to read somebody and I kind of think they're off and I just, well, you're wrong. And I fail to consider, okay, what would cause a smart guy to make a statement like that? Is he totally wrong? Is there any truth in there? I think, as I look at this situation, here's how far I am willing to go. I still think that I am right about my observation about racial issues in America. Okay? I'm not an expert. But I hold my opinion because I think it's right. Otherwise, I would change it. But knowing that there are smart theologians out there who are saying, no, you got it wrong. This is the way it is. I at least need to be willing to say, okay, let's talk about it. teach me. I'm open to hearing this. My question for you is this. Regarding the Ferguson trial, hopefully there is one, maybe there won't be one. If the grand jury says there isn't going to be one, then there isn't going to be one. That'll be interesting to watch. Are you open to being persuaded on this issue? Or do you read anyone who has a different perspective and you tend to boil? For instance, I've been watching the responses to Matt Chandler. Matt Chandler tweeted something. Matt Chandler tweeted something like, my son, who's got blonde hair, blue eyes, and is 8 years, he's never going to be followed in a grocery store by an officer wondering what he's up to because he has white privilege. How did you respond to that? How did you respond to that? Did you just grab your holster and go, bang, you're wrong on this? Now, I think in a lot of different ways, I think that was just too sloppy. But Matt's not an idiot. Not a moron. He's got some real-world experience. Oh, and he's white, by the way. You've got to know that. Now, in the meantime, I'm reading from other people with a different skin color. Am I open to hearing their voice and changing my mind? Next on Wretched Radio.
If you need help separating the true from the almost true, check out Drive-By Discernment. 70 lectures to help you learn who, what, and how to judge. When does a false teaching become heresy? What's the role of the church in defending the truth? And you'll learn how to discern for yourself. You'll avoid theological ditches, and you'll make sure you're walking in the gospel truth. Taken from the best of the best at the Psalm 119 conferences, get Drive-By Discernment today at wretchedradio.com.
As the only Christian in his Lao village, local authorities confronted Sort about his newfound faith and threatened to take everything away. When he refused to give up Christianity, he was arrested May 29, 2014. Police tied Sort to a post as punishment and told him he must recant his faith.
Instead, Sort held fast. Authorities then confiscated over $500 from him and told him he would not get it back until he gave up his faith. But after being threatened with expulsion, having his property taken, and being arrested, he told authorities, I've embraced the Christian faith for over a year, and I've not broken any law.
To read the inspiring testimonies of persecuted Christians from over 50 nations around the world, subscribe to the Voice of the Martyrs free monthly newsletter. Call 875-VOICE. That's 875-VOICE. Dial 875-VOICE today. The Voice of the Martyrs is a Christian nonprofit organization.
Here at Wretched Radio, we like to sprinkle the donut of hard truth with a little humor. Okay, lousy metaphor aside, it's Wretched Shtick, and it should give your funny bone a workout. You'll hear from longtime sponsors like Flarinex and Marginal Landscaping, worship CDs from Sean Connery, John Bon Jovi, and others, news stories, sermon series, and a whole lot more. Yes, it's Wretched. Yes, it's Shtick. That would make it Wretched Shtick. It's downloadable now at wretchedradio.com.
It's time for a drive-by minute.
Ultimately, at the end of the day, everyone who believes that there is a God, what they're all bucking for is that when they stand before God, God will declare them to be righteous or at least righteous enough to get into heaven. But they won't go to Him to have Him tell them how they can get that verdict. They're like, well, I want that, but I will come up with my own way in order to get that verdict from God. God says, here's the deal. You want me to render this verdict upon your life? Then you cannot depend upon yourself. It is not by works, but it is simply by faith in another person who's completely outside of yourself. And that is Jesus Christ. You need an alien righteousness, not a righteousness of your own making. God is saving us from ourselves and causing us to look to one completely outside of ourselves.
You can get Drive-By Discernment and all of our drive-by resources at wretchedradio.com.
The number of professing atheists is growing at an alarming rate. Be ready to evangelize and defend your faith against atheist assaults with Wretched Worldview, Atheism. 12 video lessons and complete study guide and curriculum to equip, encourage, and provide you with everything you'll need to engage or evangelize an atheist. It's perfect for homeschool, Sunday school, personal or group study. Wretched Worldview, Atheism. Order yours today at wretchedradio.com.
important dates in Christian history. 1540. The Society of Jesus is approved by the Vatican. Founded by Ignatius Loyola, the Jesuit order sent out zealous missionaries throughout the world, counteracting the Reformation and bringing Roman Catholic Christianity to the Americas. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Open-minded, or should we just zip it shut? This is Wretched Radio. The United States is consumed with one town in America named Ferguson, and with it comes a long history in the U.S. of A. and a lot of opinions, and undoubtedly you have yours. My question for you is this. Are you willing, please listen to these words carefully. Are you willing to change your mind about the Ferguson situation if somebody can give you enough evidence? Are you open to that? Or are you, based on your history, you've studied the issue, the news reports that you've seen, the experiences that you've had, you say, no, I know the deal, the end. Why do I ask such a question? I am reading different articles posted in different places, from Christian Post to the Gospel Coalition, and there are some thoughtful theologians that are saying, we got a problem in the evangelical church. We don't understand the racial issue, and we do not understand why black people are so upset, because we've got it wrong. When thoughtful theologians do that, I have to stop and say, I will not possess so much arrogance on a tertiary issue that I'm not open to listening. Let me share with you some of the thoughts. Now, I know this might cause you to jump up and down a little bit. I'm just sharing with you some thoughts of different theologians. I had mentioned earlier that in the Christian Post, there are a lot of pastors, some of these I know and some of these I don't know, who gave their thoughts and their opinions, and most of them, with the exception really of one, are different than my thoughts on the issue. Let's start with, no, Russell Moore was pretty balanced, if you ask me. Well, here's D.A. Horton, who I thought was a home builder, but apparently he's also a pastor. D.A. Horton, it's hard not to weep as I watch the continued coverage of events unfold in Ferguson, Mo. Once again, a life was taken by an authority figure. Now, how did you respond to that statement? Okay? Because I know how I responded to that statement. And I have a pretty good feeling of how not all, but a high percentage of black people would respond to that statement. I responded to that and went, yeah, a life was taken by an authority figure. That happens because people break the law and their lives are threatened. And I trust the police overall to defend themselves and to defend the public. And this is going to happen. So I feel in that sentence like there's something buried, like, see, this is an epidemic. Authority figures killing black people. That's what comes out of my brain. Right or wrong, I'm just telling you, that's what it is. I suspect what we're seeing in Ferguson from mostly black people is, yeah, and this is a problem. We're seeing this too much. And I suspect the white chorus is saying, well, it's because there's so much crime in that community. Am I right? The eyes of our nation turn in one of two directions, toward the injustice or away from it. Now, I don't know what injustice he's talking about. My sentiment is, I would never say that. There's a practical application here to biblical theology and to church business. What we talk about and what we don't talk about. As I'm reading through these quotes from different pastors, I can't help but thinking about some of the principles of discernment. Some of the principles of discernment include, what is the issue? How known is the issue? How does the issue affect people? Is it widely known? Do I have anything to say about it? And if I don't, I don't. And you shouldn't either. In church, this is very practical. Ask yourself the question before you say to somebody, hey, did you hear about so-and-so? Ask yourself the question, why am I sharing this? What is the point of rendering a verdict on this and then passing it along? Does it need to be passed along? This is very practical. And I'm feeling that so many of these people are making a decision about a situation when they simply don't know and they're just not practicing wisdom, frankly. This is from Joshua W.A.U.L.K., a Florida pastor, Christian counselor, and a 17-year law enforcement official. See what you think of this guy. This guy's kind of got both perspectives, doesn't he?
Yep.
I think, I'm guessing he's a white guy. All right? I have unashamedly called for P.O. police officer Wilson to not be tried in the media. I have called on Christian leaders to stop using language that is unduly sympathetic to the pro-Brown narrative, without regard for the potential innocence of police officer Wilson, such as repeatedly calling Brown an unarmed teenager. Okay, do we know that? We don't know that. Was he armed? Did he beat up the guy in the store? Did he beat up the officer? Well, he's got the guy, apparently, Officer Wilson, was pretty thumped on his face. All right. That's evidence. I don't know the whole... Why? Maybe the young man who was black was defending himself against the officer. Do we know about his fate? I mean, I'm not suggesting anything. What I'm saying is I don't know, and I happen to agree with Joshua Walker. We've got to stop trying this. And the practical application for you and me is, first of all, we don't want to be doing that with news stories that are far, far away, and we don't want to be doing that in church. Rendering verdicts with people in church. Look, I am so inclined to do this, and you know why? I do it well. I can look at what somebody is wearing on a Sunday morning, and I can tell you what their problem is. I can probably tell you what their theological bent. That's how good I am at being judgmental. But I'm not called to be judgmental. I'm called to be wise and weigh in when it is needed. When it's not, zip. Zip! Why do you talk about people in church? Do you need to? Even if it's true. So there's another line of discernment. You find out about something in church that's true. Somebody did something. Naughty, taught something wrong. They took some paper from the printer. They didn't follow the curriculum in Sunday school, whatever. Okay. So you got them. You've got all the evidence. You know it for a fact. Here's my question. Do you have to share that information with everybody in your Sunday school class? You have to. What purpose does it serve? Does it serve them? Does it serve the truth? Does it serve the purpose, the person who sinned? Or do I need to reconsider what I do with this information? And maybe ultimately the answer is nothing. Back to Joshua Woke. As I have already pointed out, you can find yourself subject to deadly force by a police officer, even though you're otherwise unarmed, and more important than Brown's age was his apparent imposing physical size. Okay, so don't render a verdict, is what this fellow is saying. If you've never attempted to take a male of any race into custody, much less one who is physically large, who'd otherwise prefer to not go to jail at that particular time, you can only imagine what that might entail. At the end of the day, Brown died at 18, and that's tragic. But while we're sifting through the details at this point, I can only see it as an attempt to garner undue sympathy and to portray him as a little child, which he most certainly was not. This much I know. Police officers have been killed by children younger than 18. How did you respond to that? I suspect, most likely, if you are white, you probably agreed with most of that. I'm guessing if you were black, that probably bothered you a little bit. Now, why is that? And here's my question for you. And I know maybe it sounds a little nitpicky. I don't think it ultimately is. Can I hold on to my view in a situation like this with a closed fist? Or can I be willing to go, all right, thought I had this figured out. I'd rendered a verdict in my brain, but tell me what you know. And at least listen to it? Erna Hackett, on staff with InterVarsity Christian Fellowship. Why are we so painfully silent as debate and tragedy and grief are raging around us? Will any of our churches take time to pray for grieving families on Sunday? Not only Michael Brown's family, but the family of John Crawford, a man that was shot at Walmart for holding a toy gun. or Eric Garner, the father of six that was killed through the use of an illegal chokehold by police in New York. Now, how'd you respond to that? I know how I responded. I can tell you how I responded. If these were stories that were near me, then I'd be praying for them. As a Christian, I'm confronted with a lot of situations all day long. We all are. And praying for them in church on Sunday is just not something that all the situations that could be prayed for. If we prayed in church for 1 minute for every murder that happened in this country over the weekend, even on Saturday, we wouldn't get to the sermon. We'd all have to, at the end of the prayers, we'd all have to say amen and get to the Cracker Barrel. Because there wouldn't be time. This is an example of, don't guilt me. Okay, don't do that. Don't guilt me. This would be like me saying to you, did you pray for the car accident on Highway 85 today? Did you? What is the matter with your church? You should be praying for that accident on Highway 85. And you would be right to respond and go, back off, pal. Don't make your thing my thing. If it affects our church, our people in a direct way, then we will. And if there is something going on in our country that affects every single person, then we will choose to pray for that or not. This isn't a good example of making my thing your thing. Here's Russell Moore. As Christians, we ought to weep for the loss of life in this situation, and we ought to pray for peace in the streets of Ferguson and for justice to be done in this case. We want justice, right? Even if that means nobody's found guilty. The mandate from God to the state is Romans 13. It's to wield the sword with impartiality and with justice. As citizens, all of us ought to seek to ensure that this is the case across the board. Now, I thought that was balanced. Across the board. I don't think that if this police officer is found guilty of doing something wrong, I don't think there's going to be rioting. I think everybody would accept that and say justice was served, if justice was indeed served. Matt Chandler seems to have made the comments that have lit it up on the internet more than any. Matt Chandler, pastor of Village Church in Texas. The challenge with white privilege is that most people cannot see it. Now, that's quite an accusation. We assume that the experiences and opportunities afforded to us are the same afforded to others. Sadly, this simply isn't true. Privileged people can fall into the trap of universalizing experiences and laying them across other people's experiences as an interpretive lens. Indeed. But I would also say that that can go both ways. For instance, a privileged person may not understand why anyone would mistrust a public servant simply because they've never had a viable reason to mistrust a public servant. The list goes on. Now, what do you do with that? What do you do? How do you receive that? I have to confess to you, I struggle with the term white privilege. I think it's more... I just think that's sloppy language. Let's take a look at it. There's two words there, white and privilege. White, by calling it white privilege, is to assume that in this country, simply because people are white, they get benefits, they get opportunities that black people do not. Is that true? And the answer is yes, that is true. How true is that? How often does that happen? Answer, I don't know. I think it happens. Do I think it's epidemic? I do not. I'm not sure who has the statistics on this. The other word, privilege, it can either mean preference based on color or name or gender or circumstance, or it can be that God has providentially put me here, which suddenly makes it more complicated when you recognize that God is actually okay with different socioeconomic statuses and people being different skin color. And so the word white privilege, complex and loaded. We will see if we can unpack it rightly next on Wretched Radio.
Perfect for your family or personal devotions, Exalted Worship. So great a salvation.
All hail the power of Jesus' name, let angels prostrate fall.
Kirk Cameron will lead you in prayers and confessions.
Though my sins rise to heaven, your merit soar above them.
Scott Crepane brings you profoundly biblical worship songs and hymns.
The eternal truth attends thy word.
Get your copy of Exalted Worship
at wretchedradio.com.
This is John MacArthur inviting you to join me for Portraits of Grace. Say, have you noticed how people tend to compare themselves to others when evaluating their own righteousness? But God's standard is much higher. In fact, Jesus said you must be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. God doesn't compare you to others. He compares you to himself. And apart from Christ, everyone fails that comparison because we've all sinned and fallen short of his glory. But at salvation, God imputed Christ's righteousness to you. That is, he put it to your spiritual account. Therefore, it's your faith in Christ that made you pure, not your personal achievement. Let that truth bring joy to your heart and praise to your lips. This is John MacArthur, trusting your lives are portraits of grace.
We have access to more TV channels and less to really watch. Redeem your TV watching with On the Shoulders of Giants, as Todd takes you on a six-country European tour that will introduce you to the great reformers Luther, Tyndale, Wycliffe, Knox, and others. Our Christian ancestors willing to die so that we could have the truth. So fire up your DVD player, sit the family in front of the old tube, and watch something good for a change. On the Shoulders of Giants. Get your copy today at wretchedradio.com.
Now here's a clip from one of our favorite pastors here at Wretched Radio.
This is Vody Balcom.
And there are some people, for example, they say, well, we got to get back to the 50s. You can go back to the 50s by yourself. 50s not a good time for people with my melanin level. And then there are people, no, we go back to the 50s, you know, without the racism. Because everybody understands, you know, kind of the wheels came off in the 60s, right? That turbulence that we talk about in the 60s actually started in the 50s. But we glorify that time. Or we want to go back to sometime in the 1800s, or sometime in the 1700s, sometime in the 1600s. Wherever you go back to, there's sin there. If you're glorifying some era, then ultimately what you have is an overrealized eschatology. Because what you're after is something that the Prince of Peace will restore when he comes. And it wasn't here. Because our problems didn't start in the 1960s or the 1860s or 1760s. Our problems started in the garden. If you're not going back to Genesis chapter 2, you're not going back far enough. You're going back to a fallen era where there is sin.
Dan Barker and his Freedom from Religion Foundation has been in the news most every day this past year. You know, for 17 years, he was an evangelical pastor. Mr. Barker and Todd hooked up in a debate to answer the question, does God exist? The Case for Atheism from Wretched Radio will let you see the debate and learn how to witness to an intellectual without being intimidated, how to defend your Christian faith when confronted with atheist arguments. Get your copy today, The Case for Atheism, from WretchedRadio.com.
Books of the Bible. Haggai was a prophet around the time of Ezra and Nehemiah. When the efforts to rebuild the temple had stopped, Haggai encouraged the people to continue and reminded them of God's presence among them and the importance of assembling together to worship. When you consider your priorities, give careful attention to the worship of God. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
And you thought there was no racial tension in our country? This is Wretched Radio. Sin. I'm so sick of sin. Can I just tell you, I am so sick of sin. Honestly, I'm sick of it in my life. I'm sick of watching it because, wow, am I good at seeing it in your life. And you've got a lot of it. Oh, don't you tisk me. You do the same thing with me, too.
Every day.
I'm just sick of it. I'm sick of seeing the devastation that it costs. Causes are the pain, the hurt, the and not only that. Mrs. Friel said something the other day that is, I wish that I could repeat it as precisely as she said it. We were talking about how we're to treat one another. That we're not just supposed to get along for the most part pretty well and better than the pagans do. But we're supposed to bend over backwards for the other person. Because, if you will, that's our God. That's how he behaves. God is a servant. How do I know that?
the suffering servant Jesus to suffer and to serve us. I mean, that's just, you can't get your brain around that, at least not on this side of the veil. We are supposed to be doing everything we can for one another, never saying a harsh word, never assuming the worst, always assuming the best. And my wife said something like, and that's the way God wants it for the world. Not that he doesn't get what he wants. I'm not going to get into that nuance. But you, I mean, that's the way that it's going to be one day. And right now, it's so far from that perfection. I mean, you see Ferguson, or you see that, you know, the nonsense with taxes or the debt in California or the whole nation for that matter, and you go, oh, you hear about the rape, and it's grievous, and you see what's happening with the, I mean, just talk about here's a bad sin, an Ann Coulter article. I kid about that. Next hour, we'll play the doctor who is now healthy and thanking Jesus and everybody for everything that they did for him. I wonder if Anne would be willing to make her statements to him face to face or to the family. The idiot that got Ebola. God wants more than we can even imagine when it comes to how we should be treating one another and coexisting as human beings. We're so far away from it because of sin, and sin is so delusional. There's a story out there. Some of you know what it is. Here's a good example. I'm not going to talk about it yet until it is necessary. But some of you, I think, you know what I'm talking about. There's somebody committed a sin out there, and it's just grievous. It's just heartbreaking, and it just. It's not, now that I'm over 40, it's just enough. You did enough of this. By the way, Tony, you're going to love this. Mm-hmm. I'm at the gym last night because you could probably notice that I work out.
You've been working out, yeah.
Yeah. You probably could pick up on that.
Sure.
And there was a young man there. Turns out he was 29 years old. And this young man kicked my weights out of the way because I'd put my dumbbells down. No double entendres, no jokes, please. I put him down, and I was about 3 feet away working out in another piece of equipment, you know, doing that circuit thing, and then I was going to come back. And he thought somebody left them there, and he was annoyed, and so he kicked them away. And he was kind of a beefy fellow. So I said, excuse me, sorry, but I was still working on there, but hey, you are more than welcome to work out if you'd like to. Well, he was kind of a friendly fellow, kind of a catty-chatty. Started talking, and he said, oh, sorry, man, I didn't. He was really, like, over-apologetic. Ah, I'm really sorry, man. You know, just so many people, they just leave their weights there. And they leave stuff behind, and I said, oh, I can relate to that, and what have you. And he said, we just started chatting a little bit, and he talked about his father-in-law. And I said, and I'll be honest with you, I was mindful of where I wanted the conversation to go. I said, oh, father-in-law, huh? I said, so you've got a wife. Uh-huh. How many kids? Right? Terrific. Sweet. What do you do for a living? You do. Terrific. And where do you go to church? Because that's where I wanted to be in this conversation. And had the opportunity to witness to him, and that was swell. It was an individual who goes to church, had no idea what the gospel is. He had no clue what the gospel is. That is so common. And that's been my evangelistic question lately. They come and go for me. You can use this or not as you see fit. Where do you go to church? So and so and so and so. Do you know the gospel? What is the gospel? Do you know what that is? And more, it just gets you right there. And they admit they just don't have any idea. And they're going to church weekly. Shame on that pastor. And this fellow said, and I said, you're 29. He goes, well, how old are you? And I said, well, I'm older than you. And he goes, what are you, 40 or something? And I said, no, 35. I think we'll just end the conversation right here and walk away, because this is just going to go downhill from here. 35. Well, I'm not. And maybe at 35 you're sick of sin too. I think we should be sick of sin. I think it makes us long for heaven. Sin lies. Sin devastates. And we are seeing that in Ferguson right now. As we look at that, might I at least suggest this? The paradigm, everybody's saying, look at it through a gospel lens. I get that. But don't forget that there's a sin part involved in the gospel. And the perspectives that we're hearing, the news reports, the speaking on in some circles about the issues, laced and tainted with sin. Matt Chandler seems to think that there's an issue in this country with white privilege. I would disagree with him, probably mostly because of the term white privilege, I think is a wrong term. I don't think it's an accurate, precise, and you can't possibly define it rightly, at least with its semantic range today. Because I know there's racism. But overall, to say that everybody who's white gets an advantage and everybody, therefore, who is black does not get a privilege is not accurate. That is just not, that's wrong. So I think it's a sloppy term. And the word privilege is also loaded. God's okay with privilege. What do you mean by that? That's exactly the problem. What do you mean by privilege? Look, there's a reality here. There are some people who are born in wealthier circles with more opportunities than others. And that does not appear to trouble God. Now, it's a part of the fall. I get that. But in this culture, not everybody can be at the top of the rung. I watched a video this morning. A guy was talking. Somebody sent this into Idea at wretchedradio.com. Somebody was showing there's this much wealth opportunity in the country. Now, let's just break this amount of wealth. Let's say it was about 20 inches tall into five equal amounts to demonstrate the breakdown in culture of income distribution in this country. And 52% of people are way up here. And then way down here, the bottom rung is like 5% of people that are poor, considered poor in this country, not compared to Africa, in this country, 5%. And he said, now, wouldn't it be great if this could, at least the opportunity could be spread out? And I went, I just think that's faulty. The whole premise is faulty. Not everybody can be at the top of the rung. There would no longer be any, and we'd be socialist. There'd have to be a determined rung, and then it's all equality. Even when it comes to opportunity, there's a limited amount of opportunity in this country. So opportunity is not the issue. The issue is whether somebody unjustly holds somebody down. Because God hates that, and we should hate that too. Do justly, love mercy, walk humbly with your God is still a command that applies to us today. But sometimes it's positioned like, well, everybody's got to have the same and the same opportunity. That is just patently false. It can't be. We have to look at it from the other perspective. Provide a culture that provides for as much opportunity as possible, some because of circumstance, others because of ability, and it should never be about skin color or gender. Those issues shouldn't be a part of it, but only so many people can get ahead. And not everybody can jump ahead three rungs or five rungs, otherwise we'd all be on the same rung and there'd be no rung above us, because then it would all be flatlined. The issue is not privilege per se. The issue is racism or sexism. Now, if you want to say there's racism in this country, I'd say, of course there is, because we're in a fallen world. To say that there's privilege, well, it's too broad of a term. I just think because even biblically, understanding, some people are born into wealthier situations and with more opportunity than others. That's the way God has it set up. And he never seems in the Bible to say that overall is the injustice. Inequality is not an injustice, in my opinion, in the eyes of the Bible. Wrongly treating somebody is an injustice. And so in my opinion, Matt's use of that term, white privilege, was sloppy. So I'd have to know, what are you talking about, man? What do you mean? And I'm not even getting, by the way, his initial tweet was, my son, who's blonde hair, blue eyes, he's never going to get chased around or followed around in a grocery store because of white privilege. Okay. I didn't get into the issues of crime rates. Didn't get into any of that debate. I'm talking about precision in language. And to say white privilege, I think, is to simply annoy people, to not be accurate about the situation, and really ultimately to not be helpful. Because it implies that every police officer that has been at a different skin color besides black, who has followed a black person because he thought they were suspicious, is racist. That's what white privilege, I think, broad brushes and states. And I think that's inaccurate. And I don't think we should be doing that. What is needed for success in this country? What is required for success? Let's ask that question right now. Because and then we can answer the question, is that available? Because that is what we should be working toward. And according to every statistician that I've ever read, any financial expert, anybody who studies social sciences would say, two parents, get married and stay married, education, and by the way, faith is also a component, those four things. Now, here's my question, then for Ferguson or for anybody else. Do they have the ability to get married? Yes. Do they have the opportunity for education? I think so. Do they have the opportunity to go to church? Well, that's an interesting point right there. Because I think that it's fair to say, and I don't think that anybody's going to call me racist for this, there's a lot of problems in the black church. Hey, all day, every day, we talk about the problems with evangelicalism. So this is not a racist statement. There are unique problems in the black church. The prosperity nonsense, the word of faith, low teaching, the elevation of pastoral authority beyond what's biblical. Big problems. So that is, to me, that is a big... Now that would be something that would be we should be talking about right now. Critiquing the black churches. And then again, there's marriage is the issue here. Are people staying married? If not, those are the things that would indicate there's going to be a failure. And if these things, in general, are available in a community, I can't say there's an injustice. Now, if somebody rides in and says, I'm going to squash that opportunity unjustly, then I'm going to lament that and I'm going to say there's an injustice. But to simply state that this entire situation in the country with racial relations is an injustice, I think it's unhelpful, and I don't think it moves anything forward in a helpful way. Might I suggest, if nothing else, from this whole conversation about Ferguson, which is going to go on for a season, that we use precision in our language, and we speak rightly about the issues, so that there's clarity on the issue, so that then we can step forward and say, now we can address the problems. And I think one of the problems, quite honestly, is vagueness and sloppiness in language, and a lack of willingness to at least listen to the other side. Is that a reasonable challenge for us as we go forward? I think it is. And then I hope in the days to come, we're going to have some black evangelical Christians join us to explain their perspective so those of us who are not black can hear and learn. Until next time, go serve your King.